Welcome to Our Pod. And by that, I mean on Wednesdays we read. I'm Hannah.
I'm Laura.
And we are two best friends who usually do a deep dive into a new book series one book at a time. But it is Tuesday in your ears today. And so that means that we watch some TV with three
TV.
Friends.
And we're three best friends.
Because we are welcoming to the pod Ali Schmitz, a bookseller at Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where they have been selling books for 10 years. They told us off mic they just hit the 10-year mark. So congratulations and welcome.
Hello, I am so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
Ollie was so nice because Boswell is actually my local bookstore. And we were talking, my husband actually purchases most of their recommendations for me when he surprises me with a book. And we got to talking and then I was like, I think you'd be perfect for Murderbot. Want to come on? And you were gracious enough to accept. So,
yeah, I have no podcast experience. But I love talking about things related to books. So
I mean, that sounds exactly like us.
That's how we got started. And then 4 years later, we're here. So, as stated, we are covering season one of Murderbot, which was released on Apple TV this year. This series was developed from the novella series by Martha Wells. Ever heard of her? She has also been on this podcast. And it was first published in 2017. So I know this is a new show for everyone. But
I mean, Ollie, it has to be.
But Ollie, can you tell us a little bit about your experience with the show and the novel series?
Yeah, so I actually binged the novel series after a major breakup, and it was the perfect series for that, because this murder bot trying to just experience comfort, watch the shows that it likes, not deal with messy humans, and be really self-aware and also self-denying about its own feelings. I was like, this is where we're at. This is where we're at in October of 2024. So it's actually, I was late to Murderbot, partially because so many of my coworkers had read it. Sorry, you're going to get cat on audio now. Clover is here.
Hello, Clover.
We love pets.
Partially because so many of my coworkers had read it. So I was like, oh, this book doesn't need my help. It's that bad bookseller brain of, oh, well, so many people love this already. I don't need to read it and add my voice to it. I'll get to it someday. And then when I finally got to it, I was like, oh, this is everything. This is incredible. I love the story, the character. And then it was not long after that that the first season of the show like came out, the trailers and everything dropped. I think a lot of people had a similar reaction, was at first surprised when Alexander Skarsgård was announced to play Murderbot.
Yes.
I think that's like the first thing is like the casting announcement.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
well, I think that one specifically got most people, because the other cast members, I think, were very well received when people found out who was playing what role, except for Skarsgård, where people were very much on the fence.
Yeah. Because I was like, oh, I mean, I guess he does look like factory produced white guy. However, for me, it was more like, oh, this would have been such a good opportunity to have a non-binary actor.
Yes.
Or like a woman, just like anyone other than a white man who's already an established actor.
Yeah.
So I was so hopeful that that would be part of the Murderbot show, that we would get to see, like, yes, this is truly a face you can put on anything. And so I was really skeptical going in. I didn't start watching right when the episodes started coming out. But how did y'all take that?
I was also in the same boat as you, Ali, because when they announced that, I also very much pictured someone non-binary to play Murderbot. And so it was tricky for me to picture how they were going to do the show. And I think I was kind of the same where I was like, I don't know how I feel about this. And it was a show that I was like excited about, but I didn't have an Apple TV Plus or Apple TV's subscription. And so I was like not really trying too hard to go out of my way to watch it either. And I think that specific casting was kind of the hesitation for me. But I will say, Hannah and I have had Martha on the podcast before, and the only reason I'm very okay with Skarsgård being cast in this role is because he does have this amount of star power that he can be like an executive producer and bring in a lot of people to the show, I'm assuming, and people will watch because of his star power. And I think that that's great for Martha because I really like Martha and she seems like just such a lovely human that I'm like, I hope she has all the success in the world. And I think Skarsgård can attribute to that. But I was also very skeptical about that casting.
Yeah, I mean, we covered the entire book series on the podcast. It obviously held a very dear place in our heart because we both did love it, and it was like
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
huge getting to talk to Martha. That I also think that when Alexander Skarsgård got cast, we both were just like, okay, I guess it's one we'll just put on the back burner and we won't watch for a while. And I actually also didn't want to pick it up right away. And the only reason I did was randomly my mind was burnt out on Silk Song, the Hollow Knight sequel. And both my sister-in-law and I were home alone. And we were just sitting there being like, we can't play Silk Song anymore. It's been like 8 hours. And we weren't supposed to watch it in the first place. Like, we had come home, we were like, we're going to watch a movie, we're going to take a break. And then when 8 hours later, I was like, I'm turning on Murderbot. And we watched like five episodes and we were hooked. And we were just like, well, this is amazing. This was the brain break I needed. And so I think because I hit it at like, I think Laura's right. Like, the nerdy, bookish person inside is always like, I want the cool indie person and I want this to be good representation. And it is a huge bummer that Alexander Skarsgård is a white man who's very successful. But I do think Laura's right that like if we want this to be mainstream, it does help to have Alexander Skarsgård in the
Oh, yeah.
room because he gets the interviews. There aren't a ton of Murderbot interviews. I've tried to find them.
No.
No.
But like he's been able to go on shows and push it. And I do think
Yeah.
that that is helpful.
And what brought me around to him before I'd even come around on like the acting, because the performance, that's a whole nother topic of conversation, was that he was a fan, that he like really want that he w came in like wanting to produce this, like wanting to make it, like someone who hadn't encountered it for the first time as a script, but as the original stories, and wanted to bring those to life. And that for me was like, okay, I get it. I can be sold on this. And also, if I'm thinking, oh, this is a character that any person can be like put on, I guess I will allow in my mind for Alexander Skarsgård to be the face that I put on this, and then still have the infinite murder bots of my mind.
Well, I do know. Well, I did listen to a couple of interviews. He actually said he read the script first before
Oh,
reading the
okay.
books. So I don't want to burst that bubble.
No,
But
no.
something that charmed me about him was A, Alexander Skarsgård obviously has a different accent in most films he's ever done.
He's Swedish
He is
also, yeah.
Swedish. Yeah. I think he kept his like normal speaking voice for Murderbot, which I found oddly charming, like that he didn't put on another affect. And he said like his read of Murderbot, because I think we've all read Murderbot, and like Murderbot is a comfort character. Like, it's so relatable and so cute. But when he read it, he kind of just reads Murderbot as like, he just procrast or it just procrastinates a lot. Like, it could do anything. And it's just sitting there being like, I'm gonna be a couch potato. And I was like, actually, that's a very good read of what I think Murderbot sees in itself. And I do appreciate that, like, he's coming from Murderbot first perspective, because I think everyone else kind of puts themselves into Murderbot. And I do like that he had that take on the character.
Yeah, that's a unique way to come about it, actually.
Yeah, like because he was like,
I've
"Oh, you read the first page,"
just
and
you murderbot so hard that you read
you're like, oh,
Murderbot
this
straight
doesn't
up.
seem like how Murderbot would think about it. It doesn't like that. I was
Yeah.
like, it became it hacked its governor module. It can do anything it wants, and it's gonna go on these adventures. And it's like, I don't know, maybe tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's
It's like
perfect.
there's a
So,
lot of episodes of this show that I haven't watched that I need to download.
Well, Rise of Sanctuary Moon is
God.
perfection
Rise
in
and
the
Fall
show.
of Sanctuary Moon.
We will talk about it. But for an overall
Yes.
summary, for those who haven't watched the show or read the books, what are you doing? Go do that. Murderbot is about a sec unit who identifies itself as Murderbot. It's a self-given name. It is a construct made up of human and cyborg-like parts. In the first scene, it hacks its governor module that controls its autonomy, but it knows that it would be scrapped for parts if it was discovered. So it continues to do its job as a security unit and just downloads thousands of hours of entertainment to keep itself from being bored during this time. Very soon after, it goes on a mission to protect a group of free agents who it identifies as a horde of hippies, pretty much, who are not part of the Corporation Rim because the Corporation Rim controls everything, and they are who Murderbot works for. And it follows
They're from
them,
Pres Alliance, correct?
yes, Prez Alliance, and it's like a free group. And it follows them as they discover they are on a planet that has a nefarious group of people known as Gray Chris there to terraform and benefit from illegal activity and wants to kill them all. Murderbot has to help its helpless, hu hapless humans as it navigates issue like its own anxieties as well as others. So that is a broad overview of what we see in the season that ends with Murderbot getting its autonomy back from with the help of the humans, and they want to accept it into their society, and it decides to kind of go its own way instead, which is how the book ends, but it's very beautiful.
Can I just for a moment go back to the casting of the show in
Yes.
general? Because I think that this really made the show. It was incredibly well cast. And
Yes.
the main characters, in my mind, like Mensa, Pinley, Garothan, they were mine and my husband's absolute favorites. We loved the three of them. Pinley was my husband's favorite. And I really loved Garothan and Mensa, and I also loved him when we covered the book series. But the casting overall of the main cast was phenomenal. And then when they bring in the Rise and Fall of Sanctuary Moon, we have an additional cast, which was spectacular. And we have like Jack McBrayer just randomly.
John Cho being like,
John
I'm going to be a
Cho, they're,
special guest
yeah. They're
just
just
eating
randomly in
scenery.
this show. I'm like, okay, I would totally watch the two of them have all sorts of things happening in space that are extremely dramatic. But I just feel like they could not have cast this show much better because all of the characters were so perfect in their roles, or all the
Yeah.
actors were so perfect in their roles, not characters. They seem like the characters. It's so good.
Yeah.
They did do some spectacular casting. And I know, like, I just reread the book. So they did get rid of one of the characters and they had Arata married to Pinley, which I think was actually a very effective change.
Sure.
Cause, like,
Yeah.
Pinley in the books, they're like, they just scream all the time. They're very angry. And so, like, to give them a very, like, grounded love, like, person that they want to do, like, be nice to, it was very good and very helpful. So I did like that.
There's actually two characters from the books missing.
Oh.
Cause, oh wait, yeah, cause Oversay and Velasco
Oh yes,
are the
Oversay was
ones
the next
missing.
one.
And then Arata and Oversay were originally the married couple.
Yes.
Yep.
So they combined Oversay into Pinley and then split Velasco things between Garothan and Arata. And I think reading the book, Garothan to me, for some reason, I just pictured like someone much older than the actor for this.
I
Like,
also picture an old person, but I think he's kind of old. I think he's like 60, isn't he?
the actor for Garothan?
I think
He
he is.
is—he's
He's
50.
50. Okay.
No way.
Everyone that's older than me is 60 years old.
Oh my God,
He
I
has been
read that as
around
like a
for
young 30s.
He's so funny because he was also in the Suicide Squad as also an awkward man who felt like very beleaguered. And I was like, that
And he
man
was
has a
in.
very specific typecast.
He often plays like
Yeah.
the
Yeah, because like the awkward combined with grumpy just gives it an air of like overgrown adolescence where I'm like, you
Mm-hmm.
can't, you're not that adult yet. And so I think that the difference in the book for me was, Grothin would say catty things, but I saw it as like coming from like someone's upset dad instead of like someone's angsty nephew.
Right.
That's the that's the split for me.
He did seem a little bit like there was more bite to him, and I think because they
Yeah.
like re revealed some things that happened in the books like later that get hinted at,
Yeah.
which is something that like Murderbot the series has to do, because a
Yeah.
lot of the novelization, like, you learn what Murderbot thinks is important, but Murderbot doesn't really care a ton
Murderbot
about like the depth
hates
of people.
Garrothin, so why would it care to bring that up?
We're not going to see a ton of like the individual machinations of the people, because Murderbot isn't very good at reading people, but the viewer has to see them. So like watching Garothan do some of these things after you know what's in Murderbot's head, you're like, you're being really mean to that bot. Like, could you stop?
Yeah, and I think that that just played out so well with the like staging and dialogue and shooting, all the production things that I know nothing about because I've never made a TV series, but just all of the elements lined up for all of the character interactions. And at first I thought that it was a little overdramatic. I was like, oh, these are like really big personalities, big performances, like the visuals are like, the hippies, the horde of hippies, like, whoa, really all out.
Or they're
And
doing like a big
then,
group hug all the time, and Murderbot's standing over the side with the largest eyes you've ever seen. Like,
Guri, get in here. And they're like, we have to pick. And it's like, what, stop, please. Like,
And just like noticing that the humans are so much more emotional than I had read them in the book because I read more like straightforward and dry in my internal delivery. But I do think it makes the characters and the ones that they had to condense like stand out as distinct personalities more to have to like be more emotive. And then a friend of mine actually brought up to me that Murderbot is understanding humans through soap opera and sitcom tropes, like through the TV tropes. So from Murderbot's point of view, they are all super hyper emotional, super hyper dramatic, because like the drama is what it's seeing.
Yeah,
And
because
that's
if we're
what's
to believe that the TV series is through Murderbot's like retelling, because we do have like that, like Murderbot's like kind of talking us through at the beginning and the end. So if we do kind of believe that this is, we're watching a retelling, you would have someone thinking like, oh, that is really weird to do this large group hug. Okay, you guys are way too much.
We're just like having Murderbot go over and being like, what are Pinley and Arata up to? And they're like, I just love you so much. And it's like, oh,
And saying that it preferred to see the biological creatures, whatever those were, like having sex on
Yep.
top of the rather than what the humans did.
I do think I was reading a couple of reviews for this. People did notice that like over the topness that isn't in the books, but they also noted that like the books come from a very internal humor, and that's really hard to like
To
see on
portray
the
it.
screen. So like they're going to make them a little bit bigger, which I think is true. And I like the take of like this is Murderbot's retelling, but I also like that the show within a show is so over the top,
Oh, yeah.
because something I'm fascinated with is people who make TV from something written in a book, because people have gone on the record and like I remember this specifically with Daisy Jones and the Six, that like the producers of the show were like, you said in a book that you wrote the greatest record of all time. Thanks for giving us that job.
Yeah.
Like, because no matter what, it's just not going to be. So I do like that, like the rise and fall of Sanctuary Moon has always been Murderbot's favorite show, and you hear so much about it, and then you watch it, and it's just like trashy
And
television. And I think that
everyone
that's
brings it up like
perfect.
that's terrible TV.
Agree to disagree. Like, the funniest line. So,
I will say, I can't remember exactly because it's been so long since I read the books, but I really did enjoy in the TV show how Murderbot would incorporate lines from the show into like its own techniques and like problem solving, where it would like literally repeat things when it was in like really tense moments, like this will get us out of this, or it would use names from the show or something. And it took quite a while for it to be found out, but I th thought that that was a really good way to kind of incorporate like the importance of the show to this construct. And I can't remember if that happened in the books or not.
I just reread it. I don't think it did happen in the books. I think it's much more like in the background that it really
Okay.
likes that show. They do still have the moment where everyone's like, well, what has it been doing with its time? And
It's been watching hours of Sanctuary Moon.
but they ask a question and it's like, that's a ridiculous question. You got it wrong.
Well,
So.
that's when Rathi asks, they're trying to figure out whether or not it has watched this, and they ask a question. They're like, hey, do you remember the episode where such and such happens? And Murderbot says, that's a damn lie. And my husband and I cackled at that because it was so perfect.
I love too how in the earlier episodes you get like some of the you can see some of the like cringing and stress of Murderbot as it is being asked to socialize more but I just think the micro expressions acting got so intense and so good over the course of the series.
Oh.
So that by the end, like there were just like the tiniest shifts in facial expression for Skarsgård's Murderbot were just so telling, like, and made me cry. And I'm not a huge crier. It takes a bit.
Well, to bring it back to Skarsgård, I mean, we all like had our issues with the casting, but he did do a really good
Oh,
job at
he's a phenomenal
Murderbot.
actor. I've
Yeah.
actually really liked him in everything I've seen him in. I used to be a big True Blood fan back in the day, and I watched him in that, and I watched him in Big Little Lies. He's a phenomenal actor. That Skarsgård family is stupidly talented. It's not fair,
And he
but
just has a
yeah.
very emotive face that I don't think I was expecting because he's the pretty Skarsgård. Like the other ones all have like a little bit of like skunk to them, but him, I'm like, well, he's the pretty one. And then him just being like a very stiff sec unit and being able to like have on his face just a look of horror as Labibi is like hitting on him and assaulting him. And he's just like, please kill me. I don't want to be here. Like,
Libby or Labibi or whatever her name is.
Libby, Labubu.
Labubu. You killed Labubu. Labibi.
Baby.
Very
She was
good
a
runner.
person.
But he did such a good job at the
Yeah.
expressions, and he really like his delivery of lines was just so effective, like internally. And someone pointed out like someone had to have been reading him those lines, and he just reacted in the moment and then read it perfect. Like there's so many different layers to it for voiceover that's difficult, and he did it really well.
Yeah,
So
truly, I was just astounded by his performance. Like I was like, oh, the first thing that brought me around was finding out that he really enjoyed the story. And then the other thing that brought me around was watching the full thing and seeing how what an incredible job he did and how true to the character his performance really felt.
I will say, when you were talking about like watching and seeing his facial expressions, it was also a little bit relatable for me because I know like we all kind of like put ourselves into Murderbot a bit and see part of ourselves in Murderbot. I know for sure, like I feel very uncomfortable and awkward in social situations. Like I have a lot of social anxiety. And so when I was seeing Murderbot's facial expressions during some of those things, I was very much like, uh-oh, this means that people can tell how we feel by our faces. So I really gotta watch my facial expressions now.
You gotta put helmets into a fashion
I
oeuvre
would really like
because
that. Just cover my face.
it had a really good helmet. I really like the design of the uniform, but I
I thought
do,
sets and costumes were awesome too.
yeah.
So good. I do think that like the show did, although it made some changes of making like the comedy broader or the characters like a little bit more zany, it does still have the stark look at like the underlying darkness of the corporation rim and the privatization of everything, and like how bad it is for everyone. Because I think like with Murderbot, it mentions how humans are affected by this, but like when they bring humans into it, and like even with the Labibi character, like she was obviously a fake person, but she was like, oh yeah, my contract says this. I'm hoping to try to get a baby after this. And it's just like a very harsh look at the realities of capitalism.
And even the parts that they added to that, like, were I think just to make it more overtly harsh, that this is the type of world that space capitalism could end up being. And like the I think it was while there was a voiceover of it explaining like how sec units get made, and like how there can be problems with coding, and you see what's happening like in the factories there, and people getting time added on, and then in the brief period after, is it okay to spoil, like,
Oh yeah,
so okay,
spoil
cool.
away.
After the mission, when they're back on that space station, and sec unit gets a different job and is
Union busting or string busting, like
and also like doesn't is like memory wiped, and yeah, I think they put a lot of work into that, like wasn't more than like passing mentions that you get from context in the book of like, oh yeah, we understand this is bad, but they did a really good job of showing that it's
Yeah,
bad
they
and it
really fleshed
sucks.
out moments like that where, you weren't really expecting, even like going into certain episodes where Murderbot would say, like, this person's an asshole and that person's an asshole. That one too. That one, not so bad. And
Not so
I'm like,
bad.
oh, I wasn't even thinking about getting kind of these like looks into factories or like seeing like picket lines or anything like that, that these type of things would be shown within the story. I was thinking we were basically just going to have like, oh, we're with the Prezox team, like that's who we're talking to. But I do think it added a lot of depth to the series because as we move forward, that's context that is going to be really important moving on into future seasons. So they did set themselves up really well to have episodes play out that way because it just kind of develops the world more for people who haven't read the book.
Well, and in the book, it's like it's kind of said in this underlying way, like you said, where they're talking, and Murderbot will be like, well, they never want to spend money on me, so my educational units are terrible. And I'm like, that wouldn't play out as well on the screen, like just hearing about that, because like it's doing so much that I notice, like in the books, it can talk about how it's looking at like three different things all at once, but it can be like, oh, but I'm limited this way. And here it's like, no, you have to kind of see how people are actually interacting in the world, and that's where you're going to get your world building. And it's so perfect. I really liked the look of privatization and the look at like what makes a person, which is a huge part of the series. I think they did a really effective job of like playing Garothan and Murderbot off of each other, or like Murder. Garothan had said so many mean lines, but I wrote this one down where it's like, maybe you're just a defective unit who is one thought away from killing everyone around you. And I was like, that's just a person. Like, and it's a very stark look at like humanity through how you can view like this being that we built who does have emotions. Like, no one questions its emotions. They just question how much control it has over itself because of the privatization of space.
Yeah, I think free will ties very closely into the discussion of whether or not something is human. And yeah, I thought that those were it's obviously a huge theme within the books, so it is within this too.
Also goes into something that like Laura and I talk a lot about, of like people who are sometimes in oppressed communities can sometimes like shut the door on the way out if they get out of them. And I did see, or I saw flavors of that in Garothan, or Garothan as an addict being more judgmental of people who don't have control over their own selves. 'Cause like you can kind of see like Garothan is an addict. They talk about that. It's actual, like, it's not even subtext, but like his judgment of Murderbot is like, I know what it's like to be part of the corporation rim and not have control over myself. So I know what's going on in this like bot's mind. So obviously it can't change. And it's like, you've changed. You just don't see that in other people. And I do think that that was a really effective discussion because, like, as someone with a drinking problem, like, the look at Garothan was really hard for me to get through because I was like, can't you just be nice? You know what this is like to like have this hurt, but like he doesn't trust it, and he is someone who has a lot of like deep thoughts about it. So I do see him as someone who like he got out of it, but he does kind of want to shut his door and like ignore what's still going on to a lot of people.
I think the actor also did a really good job. Damien did a really good job at this because it felt like more so to me that in watching the TV show, I saw more of a sense of longing for community from Garothan than I ever got from the books. And I really just appreciated how that was acted and how Garothan was very much a character that seemed just desperate to keep the people that had accepted him and cared for and loved him safe, and to make sure that he was doing all that he could, and even reluctantly getting involved at times when he didn't want to because he just loved these people so much and this crew. And I just thought that was really a very good way to portray this character. And I don't know if this was super intentional on the actor's part, but they definitely carried that out.
He did a very good job. Although I will never not get the ick when he is in Mensa's bed smelling her
Okay, can we talk about the Garothan Mensa thing?
pheromones.
Was that in the books? That
No, I don't think it is.
No, it was not.
It was not in the books.
That was the most shocking part of the whole show, honestly. Someone had their head blown off, and I still was like, ew, get off that pillow, Garothan. What are you doing?
Get off that pillow. That is probably one of the most shocking things. So in the books, there's passing mention that one or two of the characters has a huge crush on Mensa, one of them being Pin Lee. And Murderbot mentions that, and then one of the other characters who was like taken out of this story. So I think that's just to kind of show the messiness of humans and to
I
show that
guess.
like Garothan is someone who, like you said, is very much like, I have to protect the people I love and is like dying for community. So
This
maybe.
almost crossed the line though, because like,
Yeah, is
I care about my community a lot, but I don't know that I'm going around smelling my community's pillows. That's weird.
it's also to show that he himself similar, and this is where I'm like, people who are too similar to each other could be extra mean. We're like, Garothan hasn't had healthy community before, so he doesn't know what to do with a crush that's healthy. And this is not me excusing the behavior because people don't do that. It's gross. But I do think there's like something to be said of like, he and Murderbot both don't know how to function in society, so they both go about it the wrong way. So, like, he gets really mad that Mensa is developing a friendship with an asexual bot because he's like, "You're interested in it," and she's like, "Why would I be interested in it?" Like, it's very different. So I did view it that way on why they did what they did, but I didn't like it. It was a very gross scene.
I feel like we still could have played it more like the books, though, in my mind, where it was like they just have a caring relationship, not that Murderbot's able to see into Men or into Garothan's thoughts, hearing Garothan be like, Mensa, I love you. Why don't you love me back? Why don't you love me back? And I'm like, this is too much.
Or even just like just the mention of the crush in the book, like you don't think, ah, oh, yes, crush, smelling their bedclothes when they're away.
Hormones.
It's like, I think the relationship messiness was it. In the show, I think they had something between Pin Lee and Bardwaj with
It's,
like,
yeah, they had them
like, oh, you
admitting.
didn't really like, sorry, you them admitting.
No, so this is one of my favorite things of the show that, like, Sabrina Wu, who plays Pin Lee, is like androgynous. And they're the character that everyone is obsessed with. I loved that because, like, yes, let's have that portrayal all the time.
Pinley
But
was my husband's favorite.
because Bardwaj admits that Pin Lee and her have a very close friendship. Pin Lee came to like a conference that Bardwaj didn't expect to see them at, and afterwards, Bardwaj is like, "I'm in love with you," and Pin Lee's like, "I'm not." And then We know that Pinley is married to Arata in this, and they start a throuple with Rathi, with a contract.
And
Then
Rathi is also obsessed with
Rathi is also obsessed with Pinley, and it is a very funny scene where like Arata has the hots for Rathi, and so he's like, "I have to break up with you guys because I'm way more interested in Pinley." And Arata's brain breaks, and I was like, "Nope, I'm
Yeah.
here for it. I want to see so many more seasons of that, of everyone just being obsessed with
I
Pinley."
mean, I think it maybe it's just like the way that Sabrina Wu acted it, but Pinley was very easy to fall in love with as a viewer too. So it's like very understandable, like, oh yeah, all the characters love Pinley. Also all the viewers love Pinley.
Yeah, I'm one of the better ones to date out of the entire group because,
I did
like,
like the moment too in that where Rathi's like admitting like I can't continue this because I'm more interested in one of you, and how you mentioned Hannah that Arata's like, what? It's not me. And how Pinley does call Arata out and is like, why wouldn't it be me? Why can't it be me?
you're attracted to me. Why can't anyone else be? I
It's like
do
everyone
like that,
is,
like,
so.
a lot of the romances are either like got the hots, or it's like a very specific type of like, oh, I have deep affection for this person. And that is like something that Murderbot would hate seeing. So it's perfect.
Yeah, I feel like they could have done the Garothan crush with puppy dog eyes
Yes.
and yearning stares, and
Yes.
that would have driven the point home without the
The pillow
smell
was
the
too much.
pheromones. Yeah.
The pillow and Murderbot screaming, "Why don't you love me?" Where I'm like, let's
Yeah.
not put all of his emotions out on display.
Yeah.
Those were, I think those were literally the moments where I was like getting the most confused and ick out of
Yeah.
anything in the show, honestly, where I was like, what is happening here? This can't be right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are
That's where
certain.
it split the most from the like tone and feel of the book for me.
Well, and there were like moments like the last episode, I really liked what we saw with like the union busting and the look at like memory and things like that. But I'm not sure I needed the sudden scene of them all rushing into the acid bath to be like, stop, you have to stop. I was like, I actually didn't need this. Like, yes, it makes me sad, but like, I was fine. You could have had, because like in the book, nothing really happens. Murderbot wakes up and everything is taken care of, which makes sense that you want to see that play out on screen. But there were certain parts of the last episode where I'm like, I don't think you needed all of this.
I think some of it was hard to watch in that last scene, but I think it was again just more world building because we do see like those people that work there that are treating Murderbot as less than
Yeah.
because it's a construct and they're like spitting on it and everything. And I thought that was really hard to watch and it's just like icky to see. And then to see like all the legal things that they had to go through and everything, I was like, okay, so it is boring to watch legal drama in this way, but it is effective for the world building.
Yes.
So it does kind of just open up a little more how hard they have to work to get Murderbot to some level of self,
Autonomy.
yeah, autonomy.
Yeah. And I did enjoy the legal drama side of it. I felt like that really carried over some of the things I really loved in the book, like just like Pinley's like competence and
Yes.
not just yelling at people because they are doing stupid things, but also knowing their shit when it comes to legal stuff. And also I think the having like such a like mix of genders in the cast, and having Pinley, who is a woman in the book, be a non-binary character, also for me smoothed over the like really wanting Murderbot to be an opportunity for someone who wasn't a cis woman. I was like, oh wait, I mean, given that no other character in the like group is like that same exact thing, it's not as much of a hit, I think, because it's like, oh well, look at all of these actors who are getting the opportunity to play characters that really suit them and that they're pulling off incredibly. I mean, Mensa is so Mensa.
Right, so Mensa.
Like, I can't imagine any other actor pulling off. It's just the perfect mix of
I feel like after you've seen 30
yeah.
seconds of her playing Ida Mensa, you're like, okay, I'm in.
Yeah.
Well, It kind of goes back to what Laura was saying. Like, if we're watching this as a representation of Murderbot's interpretation of the events, like, of course, its favorite person is going to be the most confident, like, straight-laced, straightforward person. And then just like every time she has a panic attack, Murderbot's like, please stop, please stop. And I don't think we got as much of the panic attacks in the first book of the series at all. I think that they played into that too to kind of like foreshadow things to potentially come, which I liked. I thought it was good to have like Mensa be the most competent, but also show that like she is freaking out. She isn't perfect. Perfect casting. I will say the Pinley stuff at the like the final episode, there were so many things I liked. I did really like Pinley and like their most competent self. And as a former attorney, like that is unfortunately how you get autonomy and bodily rights to people, is treating them as evidence and treating them as like it's a very stark but like honest look of like Pinley being very effective because they know how to utilize the system. And Mensa does because like in the press conference, they're so specific about what they're asking for and how they're showing the company because like they never name the company. That's a very specific choice. But like they're like, the company was so wonderful in everything that they did. We just want this injunction because we need the evidence against these other bad guys. And like, that is how you get things done. They are doing a certain type of negotiation with them where they're like, give us what we want, or else we will stop being nice and more honest things will come out. And like, it is treating people like evidence or treating people as like fodder. That is a very capitalist and realistic look at like how society actually works. And it's a super big bummer, but it is super important. So sorry, that's my lawyer TED
No,
talk for a second.
I'm sin because that's amazing that you have that experience and that knowledge. And also, God, that sucks.
Yeah, it does. But, and that's like, I don't know, it's
A
the beauty of
double-sided
the,
coin.
I know, it's the beauty of the Prezox team that like they are a team of people who want a better life and they are like more of a community. They talk about how like, oh, if you want a kid on Prezox, like you just say you want one and then the community supports you in your journey. But like, they also recognize that they live in a society that is capitalist, so they try to make sure that it works for them in order to help. But even they fail sometimes because, like, a huge part of why Murderbot leaves is it doesn't really have a purpose on Prezox except for like gaining knowledge, and it has a guardian, and that is incredibly infantilizing if you think about it for these like people who do exist, they just exist differently. We're like, Murderbot says at the beginning, I don't know how anyone else thinks because I've always been me. It's like, well, it sees nothing wrong with itself as a bot. It is what it is. But everyone else is like, well, you'll have so many more opportunities. And it's just sitting there thinking, like, I don't really need that.
I think that they did a good job portraying how the Prezox team is very much like a very competent team and aware of their situation as like being free agents within this like capitalist hellscape, but also acknowledging that they also are a little bit naive too. Like they can understand this on a broad level, but they don't understand person to person. Why wouldn't you want to come and be here with us? Oh, you have to do all those things to have a baby? That sounds terrible. What? You signed up to try to kill us? That we're just trying to get information. And there's this, like, I don't even know how to explain it, but they're like very well-meaning and smart, but at the same time privileged and
It's
a little
well-meaning
naive.
white. It's like why well-meaning privileged people, well-meaning white people, where it's like you want to help, but you don't always know how.
And you don't have that connection at the same time either, where it's like there is this general understanding of people's situations, but not quite at a deeper level.
Yeah, and then I think that plays so well into Garathan being the one to go around all of the company barriers, and in the end be the one to retrieve Murderbot's memory logs, and bring them back over. Like, yeah, you guys can all try to play the game, And you're aware of all of the rules that they've stated they're playing by. But I know from my experience with this company, what is actually necessary to get things done. And then, yeah, is really, I don't know, sweet and selfless in that move. Those scenes were so good for me.
So, you mean when a doctor is trying to say with a straight face, I don't blame myself for making you an addict, and he goes back with, you mean the drugs that were intended to do what they did? He calls it out. So I really loved the series overall. I think it's like one of the better adaptions that I think I've ever seen.
Did anybody have like a favorite moment or episode?
The perimeter. I need to check the perimeter at the
Oh,
very,
yeah.
very end. Instantly. I know what my favorite was because I screenshotted the messages I sent to my friend who's been a Murderbot fan for ages and ages. And it's just me texting over and over, the perimeter. Perimeter. Holy shit, that scene. The micro expressions, that scene. I need to go check the perimeter. Like, you know, just imagine that filling up your phone text history, and you'll get a sense of how that really broke my brain. And that moment of understanding, too, of like Grothan kind of knowing what Murderbot's doing. And to your point earlier, like, of previously being in the standpoint of like closing the door behind him, like, yes, I got out and I changed, but you can't. And then that shifting to a place of, I've experienced how difficult it is to get out and to change, and how preservation aux is kind of anathema to everything that you understand about how to live a life, because you can do what you want and help other people. And it's like, well, what do I want to do to help other people? And if you've never had the time or space to figure that out, I think Garothan just sees that, and that moment of acceptance and that exchange. I had to rewatch it multiple times because it was just so perfectly done, the timing, the delivery, the facial expressions, and yeah, just that really, I sorry for rambling on that one for a
No, I
while, but
appreciate
I
it.
just instantly, top of my head, I know that is the scene. That is what got me.
That is beautiful.
What about you, Hannah?
I think one of my favorite episodes, because like there are so many emotional beats that I'm like, I think I have like favorite episodes, but I think one of my favorites was probably Command Feed episode 6, where Murderbot and Mensa are trying to fix the hopper that they're in, and it's so good because their friendship back and forth, like in that moment, is at such a tension point where, like, you could tell Mensa wants to murder this bot.
And she thinks she's having a heart attack.
Yes. And like, it's sitting there being like, you're fine, don't worry. And then, like, there's just so many funny beats, but like, push and pull between the two of them, where like, she finds out that it doesn't have the manual because it wanted more of the rise and fall of Sanctuary Moon.
Sanctuary.
She starts having a panic attack, and he's like, or it's like, let's watch this together. And it's one of those moments where it's like, obviously trying to be like, this is how humans connect. And it doesn't understand that she's like, do not show me this stupid show right now. And I really appreciated that. And it's showing like they're sort of getting to the point where they think Murderbot is a person, but they're fighting that tension a little where they want to accept it and they want to be the people who are like, we accept its autonomy. We think it should have it. But it's one of those, like, when the rubber meets the road, there are ineffectual, like, pressure points for them. And it all comes to a head when Murderbot kills Labibi at the end of the episode. And the entire next episode is all of them coming to terms with it as an actual being that makes its own choices that they do not agree with. And I think that it's like such a well-crafted episode that's so beautiful on top of like Eye Contact is a really good episode because it's like the Groffin, like heavy hitters, like so many, it's just so many perfect moments. And so, yeah, Command Feet is definitely one of my favorites. It has one of my favorite lines of Dr. Mensa saying, like, it is not a premium television show. And Murderbot going, agree to disagree. And like, just not caring. It's beautiful. Laura, what's your favorite episode?
So I really liked the flashback scene that we got with Prezzox. I thought that was a really good look into them as people and kind of built things out pretty well for the show. But honestly, my favorite was the episode where Murderbot is like negotiating with Gray Chris and like acting and has to do all of these things and is like using lines from the show, and then it takes people quite a long while to notice that it's actually quoting a TV show, and how it's like this to me was maybe the best representation of Murderbot being able to be connected to all these different things at one time. Because I think maybe Ollie, you mentioned that earlier, that we didn't really get that in the TV show, but we definitely get that at this last episode where Murderbot's connected to all these different locations and is still like trying to act out like, come with me. We are going to go over here. I am doing a great job distracting you all. They totally bought it. And it's.
There's a rock in my boot.
And then they just like jump away from everything while saying a sanctuary moonline was iconic because then the beacon didn't go off. I just thought all of that was so hilarious and well done. And it really was just like peak Murderbot.
It also shows like that the bad guys are just people too, because there's so many funny moments in that scene, in those scenes where
They're
like
just like looking at Murderbot like, what the heck is going on here?
and at one point Murderbot is like, do you enjoy this planet? And one of the people is like, I do not enjoy this planet. And Murderbot goes, I do not either, but that's just me. And the guy goes, it's not just you. I just said I don't enjoy it.
Oh,
Like,
amazing.
those very good Murderbot scenes. So I like that
Yeah,
we
and
all
I
had
feel like it
very
was
different
also,
reasons.
I think that episode for me was also like another one where it was like peak facial expressions from the other actors because they were all reacting to Murderbot and wondering like, what is wrong with this sec unit?
It's also a moment where like that's a really good, and not to steal your favorite episode, but like Murderbot in its element of being like, I'm doing such a good job, no notes, because it's getting into the drama of it all. And because it doesn't quite understand like the difference between drama and real life all the time, it's sitting there like, I'm setting it all off. I have to announce Garothin's name. Oops, I already used
I already
that
killed this one,
name.
Garothin. And it's like, of course it would be named Garothin. He wants to kill Garothin. Can't stand that guy.
But then, like, when it's like there's someone who's going to explode everything, and their name is, and it's like, why would you need to name them? Like, you don't need to prove
You
yourself,
don't need
but
to provide those details, Murderbot. Yeah, I think that it was really doing a great job of that, though. And yeah, so good. So good.
yeah,
Amazing.
like this is what happens when life experience comes through soap dramas.
Oh, I know what happened to me with my love life. No, I'm kidding. But
I think, though,
like,
it really is a good representation, book and TV show, of how we do learn from media and appropriate ways to interact with each other, because that's definitely what you have happening here. So it does happen in real life all the time too. Like we learn the correct way to enunciate our and to say our syllables and all different things. So like, yeah, we pick up forms of speech from TV. Hannah and I use jokes all the time that we find on TV shows. Like that kind of stuff happens all the time. So I think this is really good representation of the importance of media.
and at the end of the day, I wrote this down as well. Like Murderbot, the series, and I think the TV show does a really effective job of this, is like it has very serious themes, but at the end of the day, a huge overarching theme is like escapism is comfort. Like Murderbot escapes into these, and we escape into like Murderbot. And I think that that's a very good like bookend or visual of all of this. And
It's
I think
very
that
meta.
the show knows that. Like, I think it really appreciates the comfort that Murderbot gets out of television and wanted to give that to people. Cause, like, as soon as I stopped watching my rewatch of season one, I was like, I could restart and just watch it from beginning to
Yeah.
end again. Like there's this could be an infinite loop of me watching Murderbot
Yeah.
until a new season comes out when we finally get to meet Art and all of my dreams come true. So
Oh, Art. I love her
Oh,
so much.
Art. And I actually see on Laura's shelf on the Zoom call the Everina Maxwell books. Like those books are that for me, where if I need a comfort sitting, I'm immediately going to like Winter's Orbit, Ocean's Echo. They're the ones where I finish them and then right away I'm like, well, I could just start this again.
That's amazing.
It's so
Well,
nice to have those types of things. I love those. Yeah.
any final thoughts that we have not discussed enough?
Great show. Can't recommend it enough.
Amazing show.
I think we're all on board that you should just go watch it.
And there's a season two coming.
It's coming. So,
I will
well,
say, if you are an Apple TV subscriber, I know Martha put this on Blue Sky, but it does help even if you have not watched the show yet to just put it on your want to watch list. I didn't realize that this was actually important to shows getting renewed and everything. Obviously, this has been renewed for a second season, but it's just important to note if you are an Apple TV subscriber and you plan to watch the show at some point, just add it to your list. You don't have to watch it right now. You should, but you don't have to.
well,
But it helps
Martha,
Martha and the
retweet
crew
this
out.
episode because it tells you that there's still buzz months later.
Yeah.
So,
And for this is not an ad for Apple, but rather a hack for people who may be receiving things for the holidays. So I actually got my Apple TV subscription for free because one of my devices broke and I had to get a replacement for it. And it came with, so new Apple products come with a 3 months of Apple TV for free.
Oh,
Brilliant.
nice.
So if you've been waiting to watch Murderbot, waiting to buy Apple TV stuff, since all the episodes are out, you can either just like pay for a month of it, watch all the episodes, cancel your Apple TV subscription, or if anyone gifts you something, I think anything from like AirPods to a computer for the holidays, you can use the free subscription and then have a little Murderbot January, Murderbot New
Yeah,
Year.
that's beautiful. This is a person who works at a bookstore and knows all the hacks of things.
I know. You said, Ollie, you're like, oh, this isn't an advertisement for Apple. I'm like, no, these are just life hacks.
Yeah,
Yeah,
this is
exactly.
just get your money's worth even on the things that you did not spend money
Exploit
on.
all those free subscriptions.
Yes.
We have to at this point.
Yeah.
Well, Ollie, thank you so much for coming on the show. Can
Yes.
you tell our listeners something you're reading, watching, and/or enjoying right now?
Yeah, so watching, I have been a longtime fan of Dropout's Dimension 20, and
Yes.
Brennan Lee Mulligan is DMing Campaign 4 of Critical Role, which had always seemed too overwhelming for me to dive into because their episodes are so long, such long campaigns. I tried to jump in at the very, very beginning, and it turned out that the very, very beginning was already years into a home game. Couldn't do it. I started watching Campaign 4. I'm completely invested. It's wild. There are 13 player characters.
Wow.
Like they just kept coming out of the woodwork. But I'm really loving it so far. I love Brennan Lee Mulligan's like storytelling and character interaction style of GMing. And it's just a really great actual play. And then reading, I read books most of the time that haven't come out yet, but to give myself the ability to read books that have been out for a while that I've been meaning to get to, I wait for my library hold to come up with them.
Beautiful.
So, this week, the Milwaukee Public Library Libby gifted me John Gwynne's Shadow of the Gods audiobook. I see
That's
those behind you as well,
Laura just
Laura.
read all
I've only
three.
been obsessed with this series most of the year.
Wow.
Say
Okay.
everything,
Well,
Ollie. Say everything.
I'm getting it. I am 60% of the way through. I love the POV characters that we're getting and the way that the different storylines are sort of starting to come together. Like none of the POV characters have met yet, but I can kind of, I'm starting to get a sense of when they will or what will cause them to cross paths. And it's really making me want to disappear on a hiking trip in Norway for like several months. So if you stop seeing me at the bookstore, that's where I've been sent by John Gwynne's Shadow of the Gods.
It's so immersive, that audiobook too. The narrator is, it's Colin Mace, I believe. He is so good. Every time he says "Orca" at the beginning of the chapter, I'm like, ah!
Yeah, I also really like his delivery because he's
Yes.
not adding too much like extra emotion behind it. He's letting the words speak for themselves and is just giving you everything enunciated with a great cadence. So that I
The characters are
really,
really effective, so his
yeah.
narration just levels it up.
Exactly. When the writing is really good, I don't really need a lot of performance. Otherwise, for people in Wisconsin who remember Wisconsin Junior Classical League and Wisconsin Forensics, where it's like public speaking training for middle schoolers. And sometimes I get an audiobook and I'm like, this is someone's forensics piece. This is someone's middle school forensics piece. I've been there, I've done that, I don't need it again. And this just hits the spot of narrator who's giving me exactly enough
Yes.
to feel in the story when I'm listening, and not so much that I don't feel like I'm putting my own interpretation vision on it. So I'm really liking In the Shadow of the Gods so far. And then enjoying is a pumpkin pasta.
Oh, beautiful.
Love a pumpkin puree and
Yum.
shell dish from a friend. So
Yum.
I don't know.
Well, no,
Reading,
that's a
watching, enjoying. That's
you hit all of the level. Well, Ollie, thank you so much for coming. You are a
yes.
bookseller at Boswell Book Company.
Yes.
So can you tell everyone a little bit about Boswell's, where they can find it or buy books from, all,
Yeah.
and what it's like being a bookseller really quick?
Yeah. So, first of all, today our holiday gift guide dropped, which means all of our staff favorites of the year have been discounted at 20% off. And we also picked a bunch of things that we think are just great gift books, like the best gifting cookbook or weird atlas book for that one family member who loves maps. We have a gift, or like for your friend who loves Myrtle, or your friend who hasn't done Myrtle yet but loves this TV show. So that can be found at boswellbooks.com. That's our website. I actually do a lot on the website because I handle the gift inventory for the store. So whenever you wonder to yourself, why is a bookstore carrying so many socks? Like, I understand the book-themed candles and bookmarks, but why can I get a cheese board at a bookstore? And the answer is me. It's because of me. It's because that's what we're doing to
And we appreciate that, because I know at least I struggle with gift giving, and you go into a place and you're able to like see some of these things. I'm someone who really quickly jumps on new hobbies. If I go in somewhere and I see like, oh, fancy socks, I'm like, I read, but I also could be a sock collector. That's happening. I now collect socks and I
It's
have all
like,
the
let me
fancy
get you
socks.
a coordinating mug and book recommendation and punch needle kit, and that'll all.
I specifically, last time I was in Boswell's, my husband was like, "Look at that mushroom mug." And I was like, "Where did you think I got my chicken mug? I have like a mug with just chickens on it, and I bought it from you guys because I was like, yeah, I want that
I know
mug."
exactly which one. That's the backyard chicken's mug from Cognitive Surplus.
Yeah, and
Microwave
it's
and
great.
dishwasher safe. That's
Oh
all
my
in
God.
my mind palace.
It's my tea. It's a tea mug. Like, I have coffee mugs and I have tea mugs, and that, my friend, is a tea mug. So.
But yeah, so I have been officially on payroll bookselling for 10 years now. I love giving recommendations. Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin is over on the east side. You can come down in person. You can check out our gift guide if you're trying to get discounts on stuff and see what the offerings are, and support small local indie books businesses. And if we are not local to you, bookshop.org has a really great network of indie booksellers you can choose to support. And same with Libro FM for audiobooks. But I'll plug a couple of my favorites real quick because Notes from a Regicide was my favorite book this year. It's
Okay.
literary speculative fiction.
Beautiful.
I think that everyone who has ever played the game Disco Elysium needs to read it.
Okay.
And it is this gorgeous story of artists in a time of revolution and messy chosen family. And this main character who, after his adopted father has passed, finds his father's prison journal from the revolution that he
Cool.
was a part of, and is piecing going back between that and his own recollections of finding this trans couple and like becoming their adopted son. And both of them have had mental health struggles and are coming from, they fled a city that was falling apart after a revolution that they played a part in, and just a really great story about like the way that you will never know how much life is packed into a person, even those that are really close to you and that you know. And it's just really beautiful. And you can get it discounted at Boswell,
Oh, it's like
but
I might have
anyway,
to go
it
and get
sounds
that
amazing.
20% off.
Yeah. This is one where I really love the person who narrates the audiobook. I love their other audiobook narrations. I do think that this is a book where if you're like a hybrid reader, definitely the text on this one. This is one that I think words on the page to eyes is where it's meant to be read, and I think the audio, because I read it first before it came out and then tried listening once it came out, and I think the audio takes away a little bit from the format. But yeah, that one was just gorgeous. And yeah, and being a bookseller during the holiday season is a lot.
Small Business Saturday is on its way, people.
Yeah, and I actually was scheduled off for that day as a like clerical error, and I could have kept it, but instead I said, "Hey, I actually I know you
Me
need
back
help. You can
on.
make me work on this day. I'll do it." Went into the back room. This is going to sound insane, but I'll work. I'll work on that Saturday.
I volunteer as tribute, I guess.
Yeah.
Like
And so, yeah, definitely go in person to a bookseller to get recommendations. Lots of indie bookstores, Boswell included, have used books and bargain books as well. And are also happy to just like give you a ton of recommendations. Even if you only go in there to buy a sticker, I'm happy to talk to you and give you ideas for all of the books that you need and places to get them also. Like if for academic textbooks, for books that have been out of print for a while, for things that are like really expensive new and hardcover that we don't have used. What matters most to me is getting the stories out in the world, and like supporting our community space and supporting the authors who are creating these stories. So we're
I love
happy to
that.
do that, and yeah.
That is beautiful. You will have to come back on the podcast to just talk bookstores because
Yes,
I feel like
absolutely.
everyone knows to support their local bookstores, but we like we never get to have the behind the scenes. So
Oh yeah, I can give you behind the scenes.
well, perfect. And thank you so much for coming on and talking Murderbot with us.
Yeah.
To all of our listeners, you know where to find us, OWWR Pod, on all the social media platforms where we exist. And welcome back tomorrow as we finish up our conversation of Tana French's In the Woods.
Yes.
A very deep, dark episode for everyone to start Thanksgiving off right. So, bye.
Bye.